Are you ready for new dimensions and countless possibilities today and for the future? It's an exciting new time, and the answers are out there. So join Mary Jane Popp as she explores the unique and unusual for a better life on Pop Talk in search of the truth. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
And time for hour two, and this is going to be a fun time because I love this gal. She's always spoken out. She tells you what she feels. Tells it like it is most of the time, too. But I know you remember the name, so hang in there with us because we are on a roller coaster ride in our politics and everything else that's going on around us. Hang in there. It's Pop Talk. And we do talk. I had a lead with that because she was a surfer girl. From surfer girl to news anchor to lawyer and very outspoken talk show host, Christine Kraft never backed away from her beliefs and what she believed was right. Now, Christine ran into some tried and true ways, and they had tried and true ways, I should say, to get rid of her talent, which Christine would not sit idly by, thank heavens. We'll get into that story because it's a great story. But suffice to say that her semi-autobiographical book, Too Old, Too Ugly, Not Deferential to Men, hit the nail on the head. And I am proud to say that we worked together at KRBK-TV in Sacramento. But I am proudest, if there is such a word, to say that she is also a dear friend. Christine, nice to have you with us on Pop Talk.
Oh, Mary Jane, you know, it's absolutely true. I always loved you so much from the first moment. You were the first person to interview me when I came to Sacramento in 1985 to anchor the news at Channel 31.
Yep.
Left Santa Barbara behind and the ocean behind, which probably wasn't a great idea. But anyway, I came up to Sacramento, and you were the first. You were at KFBK, where I later worked also, and you did a wonderful interview, and I liked you so much because you asked unique questions. You didn't ask the sort of formulaic stuff I'd been asked by everybody else after my civil rights litigation. In any event, it was so much fun, and all the years we've known each other, I can remember in that tiny little closet at KRBK putting on our makeup to do the news.
and don't forget, we used to gossip about everybody, right?
Oh, my God, yes. Of course.
But
what's life without gossip? Come on.
But we had fun. You know what? It's so changed now, Christine. I mean, we used to have fun.
And
we laughed at things. And if we'd get on the air and say one thing, get off the air and, you know, just joke about it. Nobody jokes about it anymore. You're afraid to joke about it. You're going to get somebody's going to slit your throat for doing it.
Oh, well, yeah. And listen, now somebody.
Oh, you just broke up. Say that again. You broke up.
I'm up in.
You know what? You're breaking up and you're gone. Let me try calling you again, okay? Oh, my goodness, we lost her. No, Wilk, I'm going to find her. Don't go away.
More than 6 million kids in the U.S. have ADHD, and many aren't getting the support they need. At understood.org, we can help. Sometimes in class, the only thing your child can focus on are the thoughts racing through their head.
Why am I always falling behind? Why do I feel so alone? So different?
Your child is looking to you for answers. But as a parent, you probably have a lot of questions too. What should I do next? Where do I even start? At understood.org, we provide parents with the resources they need to help kids with ADHD thrive. Your child wants to thrive. Be the reason they do. Visit understood.org/the reason to get started.
I have her back. Christine is back with us. And I'm telling you right now, I think maybe there's a conspiracy, Christine.
It's a conspiracy theory. I mean, they are eating cats and dogs, aren't they? Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, gosh.
But in any event, I am here okay. by the ocean again, fortunately. So.
Yeah. Okay, so you were telling that, you know, when we were at Channel 31 and we used to talk about everybody, and I said, now you're afraid to say anything to anybody because you're going to have your throat slit.
Yeah. I mean, especially, you know, one of the things, the two of us have both done both television and radio. And my mother had also. So when I first started in TV, she used to tell me, you know, radio is a lot more fun.
It is.
And it turned out she was right, because in radio, at least in the olden days, you were allowed to use words of more than two syllables, unlike television, which is geared down to the lowest common denominator, you know. And she turned out to be absolutely right. But I remember people say to me now, because I'm going to be 80 pretty soon here, it's hard to believe.
Yeah, I'm right behind you.
Do you know that only 6% of the population makes it to 80? So I guess I should feel lucky. In any event, people say, oh, what are you doing now? Are you writing another book? Are you still practicing law? Just a little bit, enough when I feel like it, you know, for things I care about. And why aren't you still on KGO radio? Don't you miss that era? And the thing is, KGO in the olden days was wonderful. It was, of course, in San Francisco, the ABC affiliate, one of the most iconic radio stations in the country. Huge 50,000-watt flamethrower. So we had a great general manager who kept it at the top of the ratings for 30 years, huge revenues, you know, tens of millions of dollars every year. Then the station got bought by another broadcast group. It's now a sports betting station, last in the ratings.
Oh, no.
So I'll tell you one thing. I miss it. It was such a great opportunity doing radio, especially at that level. Any level radio is fun. But the thing was that our boss, Mickey Luckoff, would come. All of us had different perspectives politically and on other things. And yet he loved the idea of having different points of view, bouncing off of each other, never told us what to say, never told us what to think. It was a golden experience.
Yeah.
If you tried to do that now, you'd get shot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just the country is so immensely, there's this huge schism. So many Americans have never even bothered to read the Constitution. They think that patriotism comes from, you know, hugging a flag. That, you know, we like flags and all that, but you've got to put some effort into it. It takes a little more effort than just, you know, waving a flag or pledging allegiance. You have to read the Constitution and understand it and support it or not. You know, you have to have some basis in what really matters, and we don't teach civics anymore.
No,
so a lot of people don't understand that. They'll say, well, if you don't do this, you should leave the country.
Yeah.
We have a free society still. We have freedom in which you are allowed to criticize government without being made to leave the country or being imprisoned. You know, we need to understand why those things are fundamental to our system of government.
I want them to know about you, too. Did you actually compete in national surfing competition?
Absolutely did.
Yeah.
In fact, we were the first group of females who did compete, and believe me, my first big contest was the 1965 Malibu Invitational, and it was the Malibu Surfing Association, Wind and Sea, Hope Ranch, which is the one I represented from Santa Barbara, and all the major surf clubs, and they'd never had women in competitions before. We had a little special weapon in all of this. There was a wonderful woman, now deceased, unfortunately, named Shelley Merritt, great surfer, lived at Latigo Beach, just up the beach from the main beach in Malibu. And her father, she was in Malibu Surfing Association, and she lobbied hard to get a women's competition as part of the event. And, oh, none of the guys wanted to do that, right? So, because they thought of women as standing on the beach, hearing the oceans roar, but not going in the water. I was never one of those people. I always wanted to be in the water. So, Shelley Merrick's dad, interestingly enough, was the Superior Court judge in Malibu. And a lot of these, you know, there'd be DUIs, there'd be all these things. So nobody wanted to really displease Shelley. Plus, she was a delightful person. So the sheer power of her, methodology of getting us, we had the first real woman's contest. It was that one.
Cool.
And competed all over the place. I was never the greatest surfer in competition, but I did okay. I just found a picture of myself in the Malibu Invitational looking back. God, I was cute. No, anyway.
I was going to say, you were a babe. No, seriously.
I was a babe. yeah, we were. And the funny thing was, Mary Jane, I have terrible vision. At least, you know, it's better now thanks to modern technology. But in those days, my surfing nickname was the mole because I couldn't see anything. And I'd paddle out in the biggest waves, take off in front of the most well-known, you know, major kahuna-type surfers that nobody else would take off in front of because, you know, you'd get hurt. I couldn't see them. I was so brave. Gosh, he's so brave. Oh, my God.
You couldn't see it.
And then when I got soft contact lenses for the first time and I paddled, I went, oh, my God.
Yeah, what have I done?
Scare me.
Now, how did you get into TV then?
Well, I went to University of California at Santa Barbara. I got a degree in English. I was always surfing through all of that. I sort of like to say I majored in surfing. But I went to UCSD, which is a great place if you're a surfer. And in any event, when I was a little girl, I always wanted to be a reporter at Time Magazine. That's what sort of the standard was, and that's how I saw myself. I always had that interest in reporting and lots of reading and digging up facts. And so I was married, went to Hawaii, surfed there, met my then husband, moved to Carmel. Oh, somebody's got to live in Carmel.
Anyway, of course.
50 years ago when it was much cheaper and much less crowded than it is today. But in any event, I just thought, well, you know, it can't hurt. I used to watch a lot of Belva Davis on Channel 5 in San Francisco. I adored her and some of the other reporters there. I thought, you know, I think I could do that job.
Yeah.
Why not? What do you have to do to get that job? And basically what I found in talking to local anchors in the Monterey area, et cetera, was you got to apply. You've got to believe you can do it. You know, It starts out that simply. And I went to the two stations, one in Monterey, one in Salinas. And the one in Monterey said, well, we don't need any new reporters. And at that time, Lois Hart was the anchor there. You remember Lois?
Oh, yeah,
really
Lois.
Well.
Yeah, sure.
And she was not a huge girl at all, but rather petite. She used to carry 70 pounds of camera equipment because in those days you shot your own film. You know, it was film days.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they said, we don't need any reporters, but we need someone to do a TV commercial. Do you think you could do that? I said, sure. My mother had done a lot of TV spots for GE and any other thing. Anyway, so I remember now, I can still remember the first line of that, which was, when I buy a car, I'm cautious, careful, and very concerned by my investment. That's why Prolo Chevrolet in Santa Cruz. And they had this funny thing. It was a chroma key situation, so it's a, you know, back screen projection. And unfortunately, if you wear the wrong color, you'll have images projected onto your clothes.
Uh-huh.
In this case, there were images of cars going across my teeth, which was... He keyed in on white teeth. You know, it was so funny. But they liked me, blah, blah, blah. So I had a presence, a media presence of some sort. I applied at KSBW in Salinas, and they hired me to do the weather. So it was a great way, as you know, to get into television because you have to ad-lib a lot. It's not off a teleprompter. You're ad-libbing. You go through all of your weather maps. You're consulting with the National Weather Service.
Yeah.
You know, and so I started doing the weather. We had a general manager there at the time who was about 5'4", tall and wide.
Mm-hmm.
He wore blanket plaid jackets, a diamond horseshoe pinky ring, smoked a fat cigar, and had a big blonde, very almost platinum pompadour.
Oh my God.
Christine, the farmers here are going crazy. We've had this horrible heat spell now for weeks. And, of course, all the lettuce is the nation's salad bowl in Monterey and Salinas in the area. He said, could you possibly do the weather tomorrow in your bikini? This was my first encounter with, you know, kind of a sexist thing.
Yeah.
So I just smiled and kind of backed out of the room. Went home to my then husband. I said, what shall I do? And he just shrugged his shoulders. That was sort of the beginning of the end. Anyway, I went to this costume shop in PG, Pacific Grove, and I bought this thing. I rented this thing. Next day, George Watson was the anchor, and he said, how come you have a trench coat wrapped around you? I said, don't ask. Just pitch the weather to me like you usually do. He's kind of going, what are you up to? You know? And anyway, so he says, and now Christine has the weather. And there I was with a trench coat wrapped around me. And I said, during this heat spell, people, mostly men, have been asking me to do the weather in my bathing suit. But I have been too shy to do it up until now. But tonight I have finally worked up the courage to do the weather in my bathing suit. Flung open the trench coat, and I was wearing a turn-of-the-century rented bathing costume.
Oh, no!
With bloomers, bows, bags, the world's ugliest garment. You know, I mean, one of the world's ugliest garments, but technically a bathing suit, though not a bikini.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm either going to get fired or he's going to love it. He loved it.
Oh, so, of course.
And then I was there just a year, and I started, you know, they'd send me out with cameras to shoot stories because I really wanted to be a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, one day, it's been about a year, got a call from KPIX in San Francisco, a big station, and they hired me to do weather and some reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Worked there for a year and a half, was then picked up by CBS in New York to do, I was one of the first sports reporters at CBS. I covered only women's sports, went all over the world doing feature pieces for the CBS Sports Spectacular on women athletes.
Yeah.
And then it goes on from there. Where did I go? I remember. Oh, came back to Santa Barbara, which is where I'm from, anchored the news there, reported there for years, and then got called again by Kansas City. You know, when you're an anchor, you're getting calls from various headhunters. You know, would you move here? Would you move there?
Yeah.
So I thought, what the heck? What's so wrong with that? You know, one of the great things about being in TV news is that you would work maybe 2 years one place, 2 years you see the whole country, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I went back, really leaving the ocean behind, from Santa Barbara to Kansas City. And there, after 8 months, and when I went there, I told them, you know, I went through being made over when I was at CBS. I do not do well with platinum blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
So don't do that to me.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And it was from one, they had been third in ratings for 3 years. And I went there, and I also did reporting because I don't, couldn't stand just being an anchor. You know me, I have to get out in the field at least once a week.
Sure.
And do some serious reporting. Anyway, they called me in one day and said, we've done this focus group research.
Yeah.
Where we go to the shopping center and pay people $20 a head to sit there for an hour and, you know, criticize various people that are on our air. And they had done this one, we found out later, where they asked the men, okay, guys, which of these female anchors of the three of us in town would you rather have sex with?
Oh, jeez. So
this is the kind of question they use to determine how to best serve the public interest, need, and necessity.
Wow.
So in any event, they told me I was too old. The viewers thought I was too old, too ugly, and didn't defer to men, that I knew the difference between the American and the National League. Well, yeah, I was a competitive athlete, and I worked as a CBS sportscaster.
Yeah.
So I know, I'm not going to pretend I don't. So, and we're removing you from the anchor desk. You can stay on and be our quote, senior reporter. I was 36 at the time. but we're taking you off the anchor desk. Well, the ratings came out 2 days later, and for the first time in 3 years, they were number one.
Huh.
So I hadn't in any way hurt their profit, their bottom line. Their, you know, their income stream is based on ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to do the unspeakable, which was to not only file a federal Civil Rights Discrimination Act case, Title VII case, but to give to the Kansas City Star, the newspaper at the time, a list of my fashion calendar, which they had created for me. This consultant came in, and they decided that they were going to make me look different.
Oh.
And they drew railroad tracks down my face. It's kind of like a Kim Kardashian makeup tutorial, you know, where they put
yeah.
on so much makeup. And all this stuff. And it was just so crazy. And the idea was, and would have you read from the Raven, these consultants do. Now read it mad, quote the Raven, nevermore. Now read it happy, quote the Raven, nevermore. Now read it concerned. So, and I had the fashion calendar, which each day selected for which color blouse, you know, whether it was puce or violet, whatever. It was crazy. And they didn't do the same thing for the men. So there was disparate treatment for men and women, not just in pay, but, you know, I had more experience than my male anchor had in any event. So I sued. It became a cause célèbre all over the country and all over the world, actually. Had a lot of coverage.
You won twice.
I won twice. Ultimately, it got taken away. We went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and only one justice. You have to have four to agree to hear what's called a writ of certiorari. You have to have four, and we only had Justice O'Connor, who I never got to meet. I'm so sad. But she issued a one-sentence statement, which they never say anything about cases that are denied. It's just very unusual. And she said, I wanted to hear this case. Justice O'Connor, when she was in law school at Stanford, top of her class, along with William Rehnquist, was also one of the same class at Stanford Law. They both graduated, top five, right? He gets a job right away. This was in the 50s. She couldn't get a job as a lawyer. They offer her a job as a receptionist. Justice O'Connor understood this very well. And she went on, of course, to become one of the finest U.S. Supreme Court justices ever.
Oh, yeah.
Just died a couple years ago now, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was very unusual. She would have definitely wanted to hear the specifics of the case, you know, at the Supreme Court. But we didn't get fooled. So even though we won twice in front of juries, we ultimately didn't win. However, real social change occurs not just because of lawsuits and people talking about things. It occurs because, well, people talking about things is really important. I went on a lecture tour many times and went all over the country into colleges and universities and law schools, and I would be in some hotel someplace, and I would hear people talking about, well, it's true, the men can have bags and bulges and receding hairlines, but the women have to look as if they're mistresses. You know
what
I mean?
That's right.
So I think my case, what it really meant was, and lots of female anchors have contacted me over the years many times, it meant an additional 10 years of being able to stay on the air. Not 20, but 10. So things occur in steps. You know, you don't change the whole world from one thing. But talking about it, and I wrote a book about it, and gave lots and lots of lectures, it did make a difference.
Sure it did. Big time. Now, how did you come to Sacramento? I mean, what was that, headhunters did that their job? Or
it was the headhunters thing, and I was not in television. Everyone said, oh, well, after what you did, you know, you challenged the sex discrimination in TV newsrooms, you'll never get another job again. You know, frankly, and people would say to me, how do you have the courage to fight that big corporation? I'd say, well, you know, when you've seen real sharks, the corporate ones just don't scare you.
Yeah.
It's true. Like, come on. Like, I'm really, oh, my God, I'll never work in TV again. What shall I do? You know, you can't fight every battle in life, but there are some that you really must take on and engage, or you'll regret it forever, and that was certainly one of them. I was just in Santa Barbara and, you know, going off every week to lecture different places, et cetera, and had a call from the station in Sacramento. Would I come up? Was I interested? I was. Came up and ended up staying, 36 years, I think, in Sacramento.
Yeah.
I had property with some acreage, so I was able to rescue doggies, my other big love.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly German Shepherds, pit bulls, or anything that was a dog I love. And was able, because I had a little guest cottage on that property, when my mom died in Santa Barbara, Alzheimer's, I was able to bring up my father. And for 14 years, he lived in the guest cottage. He had his own space, so some dignity. I had the baby monitor in his room, right?
Yeah.
And he was a military, retired Navy captain, so we had base privileges. You know what that's like.
Oh,
McClellan.
Yeah.
I said, Daddy, you can't die because I can't afford to pay anything for the commissary price. You get totally spoiled.
Uh-huh.
And then he died at 92. How dare he? But
yes.
Anyway, we had a very great time most of that time, except the end. The part is never fun.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway,
now, I got to have people know, you love animals. I loved animals. Remember every Friday night on the air, we would have the SPCA bring down an animal, and we always picked the ones with either three legs or blind or one eye or whatever, because we figured the others will get adopted. We needed to adopt
those.
Yeah,
they have a better chance. Oh, you must be dying right now, because our shelters, whether it's in Sacramento or Placer County or where I am or any place all through California, they're killing so many great dogs every day because there's just, the shelters are packed. It's awful.
Yeah. I used to show up at the SPCA on Saturday morning to make sure the dog got adopted or the cat got adopted.
We'll be there to, exactly. Oh, I know.
It's just amazing.
I know. And you know, the most famous dog I ever had and did a media thing for was quite interesting. It wasn't on television. It was at KGO Radio, and it was right after the Michael Vick insanity. And a federal judge in Oakland had given jurisdiction over 13 of those abused poor dogs.
Yeah.
That he had, you know, he would do things like attach battery cables to their, I won't use the word, nipple, and then throw them in swimming pools with his killing overalls on. It's horrible thing that he did.
Oh, dear God.
He was never charged with animal abuse. He was convicted of running an interstate gambling enterprise.
Ugh.
So people said, oh, well, he did his time. He was never charged with any animal crimes. He should have been. But in any event, they got, group in Oakland got 13 of these dogs. And it's a group called Bad Rap. They do wonderful dogs, specifically with pitties, wonderful work with pit bulls mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And so they brought one of the Michael Vick pit bulls to KGO Radio. He was wearing an Argyle sweater.
Oh.
He had a gold medallion collar.
Oh.
And he fell asleep. His name was Hector. And he just died last year. He was one of the last ones. He slept in my arms for the entire interview while I interviewed the person, right?
Oh.
But he was snoring. Channel 7, which was on the floor below us, with cameras, oh, we got to see this big, vicious pit bull. Mm-hmm. And so they see Hector in my arms. That one was pretty cool. I used to love to come
and see you because you always had pit bulls, and everybody was, oh, pit bulls, oh, my God. They'd lick you to death is what they did.
Oh, my God. And my German shepherds, I still have pictures of you visiting me and you and Rick, your darling husband, visiting with pit bulls and German shepherds sitting on the couch with you. So
yeah.
I still have all those.
Yeah, I miss those days. You know, you were mentioning something about the green screen, you know, and you did your weather thing. And, of course, when I was doing weather, and by the way, folks, Christine hired me to go do weather at Channel 31 and then eventually features, too. But it was so funny. Remember, we did a thing where we'd invite a kid or they've got had a contest. I can't remember what we did. But a kid would win, and they could come on and do a junior weather caster.
Junior weather.
And I made up T-shirts that said, pop off or pop to. I had a little saying on there in black. And each one of they got a T-shirt, and I would wear the T-shirt, and they'd be the junior weathercaster. And that particular night, I don't know what the heck went wrong with that green screen, but
my
boobs disappeared. You know, the words across, it was empty. There was nothing there. And I was trying to move every which way I could to get them back on, and I never did. I had to do a really abbreviated weather that night and throw it back
live,
to you guys.
You have to keep going. People don't realize it's
no.
Canned. It's live.
Yeah.
So you better. That's what I said about doing weather is so great for ad-libbing.
Oh, it was
funny.
Because
if you can ad-lib your way out of that, you can do almost anything.
Yeah.
You're not intimidated
it was
anymore.
Hilarious. And now Andy Asher was your co-anchor.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. But those were fun times. I mean, we enjoyed it. We launched some people on the air at that time. Michael Marks, the produce man.
He was fun.
We launched that. He would come seasonal, bring fruit and vegetables.
He would. We didn't dislike him because he brought us fruits and vegetables. We liked that part, but we liked him. He was just a lot of fun to be around.
And he's still doing it. Doing the syndicated stuff. He's still doing that. But we launched some people, and that felt good to do that because they didn't have an opportunity in most instances because for whatever reason, you know.
Right, to even get on the air. And I'm always amused by guys who think, they get a chance to be on the air and think, oh, I don't need that makeup.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm second thought.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, a lot of people say, why law school? Why did you go back? And you are a lawyer. You're an official lawyer. You passed
I'm
the bar.
I'm an official lawyer. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, when I was a reporter, especially in Santa Barbara, because I covered lots and lots of really interesting murder cases that were KEYT, the ABC affiliate with a perfect view of the ocean. In any event, did we like that? Everybody who worked at that station was a surfer. Anyway, I loved sitting in trials, not just going, because so often now, and I'll give you an example of that in a bit, you'll see a reporter and they're standing in front of the courthouse. And today, blah, 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 the testimony was blah, blah, blah. Mm. And the reporter's never even been in the courtroom, right? They're just sent over to do a stand-up and sort of mouth what somebody else told them.
Yeah.
I always liked being there for all of the what may seem boring to some, but it's the detail that matters. I always loved that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got to be, I was almost 50, I just decided to have another set of skills for the back 50. You know, it seemed kind of obvious.
Yeah.
Went to McGeorge. It was not easy because when you're that age, I had all kinds of back issues from years of surfing injuries and stuff. And I had
And you were
back
working
surgeries.
Full-time.
Yeah, at first. Not for long.
Yeah.
Because you have to read 3 hours for every hour of class.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you have three classes. Well, there's your day.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't blow off the reading. There's no evading studying the Constitution if you've been to law school, okay?
Yeah.
Every single lawyer has to study it deep, deep, and I mean deep detail. So, and everything else as well. If you're old and you're sitting in those old plastic, round plastic seats that are in law schools and colleges, these are not friendly to aging back.
No.
I had two back surgeries while I was at McGeorge and lived the last 3 or 6 months of my last year on epidurals, which is that they're a good friend if they work for you.
Yeah,
so. It was clear, and I studied for the LSAT, and I think at the same time I remember Margaret Pelley was at KCRA. She was taking the LSAT at the same time. So a lot of us who had been reporters and anchors realized that your tenure on the air is going to be bracketed to, you know, whether or not you still have the perfect pout or, you know, whatever. If you can look up at the male anchor as if he's your uncle, oh, Biff, you're so smart, that kind of thing. I could never do that, and I wanted to have other professional skills, an actual profession, because there are no professional requirements to be a reporter. You can go to J school, but it's not a requisite. You know, it's not a profession in the sense that, I mean, what I mean by that, I mean one where you have to pass certain exams to be licensed and all of that. It's a very different thing. So I suffered through law school. I survived it and then worked at a wonderful firm at that time, Farrell, Frolub, and Brown in Sacramento. It's now Frolub & Brown. I think they're still practicing. And my former boss, Melissa Brown, teaches all the great clinics over at McGeorge. She's brilliant. She's one of these brilliant legal minds, mind in general, where you say, I am allowed to talk with her.
Yeah.
This is like a big brain. Anyway, so worked over there for 4 years. And then one day, the four of us, four old geezer lawyers, we had a lunch culture at our law firm. We stepped out of our building on Capitol Avenue and walked up two blocks, went through the crosswalks or on the sidewalk, and we're headed to the burrito stand about four blocks up and two blocks over, the best one in town, and to talk about cases and have, you know, some yummy Mexican food. And we're on the sidewalk walking two abreast. Don and Melissa are ahead of it. David, my colleague, is with me. We're walking along. Oh, it's a nice day. It's not too hot yet. It's late March. You know how lucky we are, blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, I look up, and there is an Acura Legend heading right towards me. It's driven up on the sidewalk, and the person inside cannot stop. It's an 85-year-old lady with her 100-year-old husband who has Alzheimer's. She's confused, brake with gas pedal. She hit me in the stomach. I was smart enough or had enough presence of mind to have my hands on the hood of the car and jump up a little bit as she hit me. Soon I was clinging to the hood of her car, and she can't stop. She just keeps going faster and faster. I can see the husband inside screaming. And then the forces, the physical forces of that charming experience picked me up off the hood of the car, up straight into the trees, 15 feet. I did a perfect somersault, Mary Jane. It was perfect. But then I'm going, yes, I've always wanted to do those. And then you see, you know, what's coming at you is the pavement way down there.
Oh,
and you know, it's not going to be good. I could hear Melissa let out a scream because she had turned around and saw this. This woman kept going. She hit my colleague, broke his leg. He was in shock. He crawled over to me in shock and said, are you okay? David Belden, my wonderful lawyer buddy. So I'll always love him for his concern in that moment. I said, no, David, I'm not, and I don't think we're getting lunch today. Anyway, it was it fractured my thoracic spine. It made me 3 inches shorter, which is really irritating. I used to be somebody. Anyway. And, you know, I mean.
3 inches doesn't matter.
I was 5'7" and 3/4". Now I'm just this little twerp. And I sometimes can't believe how short I am. It's like, wait a minute, where's the rest of me?
Yeah.
Anyway, this is 13 years ago, so I do still have, you know, anything you injure. I was in my 60s, so this is not a good time to be, you know, have that kind of a crash. The woman did finally stop her car after hitting David about 6 inches from a brick wall. So,
oh, dear God.
And then we were ambulance trips and all this stuff, and it was, I had a hearing 4 days later for a client who had waited over a year for this really important hearing. I had to go. I was in so much pain. I was on Vicodin. I had a walker, and I had to go to this. I just had to go. So my paralegal picked me up, and I'm a zombie, right? And we get to the courthouse. You know, she's there with me. Fortunately, I get inside. We win the case. Yes. And then I thought, that's a very good technique.
Yeah, there you go.
You might just go in with a walker every time and, you know, we'll do all right.
Look but, pathetic.
I had bruising all over my face, too, because I wore glasses then, and they had dug into my face when I crashed. And so I would go to the market and Whole Foods or whatever, and people would say, I wonder what kind of work she's had done. And I thought I'd had major plastic. Yeah. It was just bruising from, you know, hideous accidents.
Sure.
I said, I wish.
But, you know, and you're still suffering from that accident.
Well, sure, because I'm a geezer now, so everything that you hurt when you were younger, whether it's a surfing injury
or
being hit by a car and being tossed up in the air and crashing down, all those things, that's where your arthritis kicks in. So I say to younger people, enjoy your healthy, strong body now to the fullest extent, you know, because there will be all the injuries you get now. Trust me, when you're a certain age, they'll kick in. That's where the arthritis kicks in. It's not fun.
What do you think about...
Not for sissies.
Yeah, no. It's not kidding. It's not the golden years. It's the rusty years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But what do you think about artificial intelligence? I keep telling people on the air, you may hear me. You may hear Mary Jane Pop talk.
But who knows?
Yeah. It could be AI mimicking me, right?
Well, sure, and we just had the perfect example of that with Taylor Swift, who said, she came out with her endorsement, et cetera, but the point of it was she was saying it was what really made it that she had to say something, and her timing was perfect. But in any event, it was that one of the people in this race, I won't say what his name is anyway, had posted an AI image of her and some little sexy outfit saying vote for you-know-who. Mm-hmm. She said, it's not me, it is not right, and it is something that every artist and every person should be concerned with, someone who takes your image and uses it for purposes to which you do not approve. You know, they're huge, huge legal issues, so it's a complex mess. But anyway, it is something.
Well,
I'm so old, I don't even know very much about it.
Well, I'll tell you, though, her doing what she did this time, and actually being her, they said she told people go register at .gov for over 400,000 people.
As of this morning, 400,000.
Yes.
And predictably, Tay-Tay fans, young people, whatever. And you can't just have a point of view about voting. You have to be registered. Many people don't realize whatever party you're for, the one who's read the Constitution, the one who hasn't. Anyway, you have to, because he did. He tried. He was when he first took office. A documentary filmmaker, wanted to do segments with all the living presidents and President Trump to do little readings from the Constitution. It was a documentary about the Constitution.
Uh-huh.
So they set up the cameras in the Oval Office and the lights, and he's all ready. He's got his makeup on. And he sat down to read, and he stumbled through his reading, gave up. This is, you can read about Vanity Fair had the story. There's several other news sources for it. Couldn't read it, and his comment was, it's like reading a foreign language.
Oh,
well, that tells me the person hasn't actually ever read it. You know, which I think is important, and it's not a requirement to run for the presidency or even be a president to have read the Constitution.
Yeah.
But it probably, you know, it's
a good idea. Yeah.
So, anyway.
What do you think about television today? It doesn't seem personal anymore. I don't relate to it, maybe because I'm old like you are, you know, we just don't relate to it anymore. But there's no fun in it anymore.
I don't watch local news at all, and I do watch the various national, watch different ones, getting different takes on things.
Yeah.
I find that one of the biggest problems, so much of it is panels of pundits. And we're trying to start, instead of actually doing a lot of real reporting, let's have a panel discussion with, you know, this person, that person, this one's a token liberal, this one's a token conservative, whatever that means these days, I'm not sure. And people watching it may not understand that there's a vast difference between journalism and opinion. They're two different things.
Yeah.
When we do talk radio, we're doing opinion. When we're acting as reporters or anchors,
that's different.
We're doing journalism. They're different things. So when you mix the two up so much that it's hard to tell, people are confused about well, I saw this reporter doing something, or someone was saying the ABC moderators in the debate were so terrible because they called out blatant misstatements of fact that they had done the reporting on. That's their job. It would be journalistic malpractice not to.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference between, and so a certain person said, I won't do another debate unless it's Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Jesse whatever doing them. They're not journalists. They're opinion people.
That's right.
So people don't understand the difference, you know, between the two.
Absolutely.
Which is not good,
no.
I think.
No.
Or also this thing of, oh, let's endless days. What's going to happen at the debate? Well, could this happen? Could that happen?
Yeah.
How about just waiting till it happens and then report on what happens instead of, you know, guessing what might happen? That's not news. That's,
you know what hit me, Ben? Basically said that, you know, he's going to sue the network because of the fact-checking that the moderators did. Well, thank you, moderators, for doing that. I mean, come on.
Hello. And here's the funny thing about debating. Actually, in one sense, he's right, and that is that in a debate, it's the other debater who's supposed to fact-check the opponent.
Mm-hmm.
However, if someone is saying, I don't care who the candidate is, if they're saying that something that the reporters know is factually, like saying that babies are killed after birth, they're not. That's against the law. There's no state in the union that does that at all. None. So to claim that there is when you know that that's not the truth, you would have to say something when it's just such a blatant. They didn't fact check him or her on everything, certainly.
No.
But when it's such a blatant thing, you mean you really have to say something. You can't just let the public believe that. You can, you know.
You know,
you can look at the criminal statutes in every state and see that that's not.
No, when we first started out, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have any of that stuff.
We had nothing, baby, except our brains and our feet.
Yeah, yeah. And even those hurt. But seriously, now you can say anything. We were afraid we'd get sued. If we had anonymous, what was anonymous? We didn't have anonymous. We actually had people who were, you know,
you had to have three
good information. Yes. And now they say all this, oh, well, it's okay. No, it's not okay. Because you got young
That's
people,
right.
I've told people, they say, well, I saw this on the internet. Did you check it? Well, no, it was on the internet. It has to be true. I said, just the opposite, you know.
And that AI image you're looking at, not real.
No.
You still don't seem to be able to realize, but you kind of understand what AI looks like after a while in terms of images. It's so blatant. It's so obvious, and they don't understand that. I don't know.
You know what, with AI, I got to ask you this, though, because I've interviewed a lot of people over the years now that do research on AI. They've actually been in there. They build these robots, et cetera. And the last question I always ask them, Christine, and it's, will they ever reach sentience, consciousness? And there's always a pause, Christine. And they go, we don't know. Now, you know what that tells me. When you say you don't know, you know. What do you think?
Yeah, or it's possibly true, and it's like, what, how the computer? No, you can't do that.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. There was a movie years and years and years ago how computers got sick and tired of humanity because he said that they just war all the time. They hate each other. They're always doing this terrible thing.
We'll show them.
Yep, just do away with them. We'll have our own society. You know, it could be possible. Yeah.
We're laughing because there's not much we can do about
no.
it, especially, you know, now. It's just kind of observing it, and you'll remember a different age in which, you know, as you were saying, reporters had to have three sources or something
yes.
like that. You could say that I have three reliable sources, blah, 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 but you had to actually have them so that if somebody challenged what you were saying, you were able to show that that's what you're where you got your information. So,
do you watch TV at all?
I do, but
what
mostly,
do you watch?
You see, I do watch, we do live in a good time to be geezers in the sense that, you know, you've got Hulu, you've got Netflix, you can watch all these movies at home. You don't have to drag your carcass to the theater, which is good. And so I watch a lot of interesting things that get my attention, at least for a moment, until I start watching, oh, I'm not watching this. But, you know, it's I end up staying up, binge watching. Why is it 2 in the morning and I'm still awake?
Yeah.
Can I watch just one more episode?
Yes.
So. And then general news in general, but not local news anymore.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. It just doesn't seem like people care anymore. Whatever they're given, they accept. And that bothers me. What do you think?
And the thing is, you've got this great internet, which if you want to do good research
from
reliable sources, it's available. You may not see what you like, but or you may. You know, who knows? You have to take a little bit of effort to, check things out for yourself, which is important.
I just didn't.
And I think a lot of people do not do that. You're absolutely right. They see it on the internet. They think it's Bible truth.
Yeah.
And it just isn't. You know, sometimes it is, but most likely it's been manipulated. So
I just had a psychiatrist on before we started our conversation, and he wrote a book, The Biology of Politics. And the question is, why do we hate certain candidates? And he said it goes to our animal nature. So I guess we still have our animal. I said, but I thought we were the top of the chain, you know, with a brain, but I guess
we're
not.
We're animals, though.
Yeah, we still have that basic need for survival and reproduction and all that kind of thing.
And yes, and bodily autonomy for half the nation's citizens, may I add.
Yes.
So it might be kind of important. So it's going to be one heck of a ride. I think it's going to be a close election.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the candidates has said that if a certain other candidate should win, that he'll move down to Venezuela. So I'm wondering why, since he's a convicted felon, all of his passports, genuine and otherwise, have been seized by the DOJ.
Yeah.
You know, he's awaiting sentencing in at least one case. So
you know,
I don't know.
With the with Roe v. Wade and that being taken away. You know, I used to tell young women, and I bet you did too, when they would say, oh, you know, thank you very much. You know, you guys fought for the right to decide what's going to happen to your body. And I used to tell them, I said, it could be taken away in a nanosecond.
In 2 seconds, that's right. And I always said, and this is something that Justice Ginsburg said, and the people on the left really criticized her for saying this, but she was absolutely right. Roe versus Wade was decided on something that's not technically in the Constitution.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that we have this penumbra of privacy rights, like we have privacy rights to our own. We do not. It's not explicit in the Constitution at all. So Roe based the decision to give women those rights based on, you know, the sort of the illusion of privacy rights. It's not just abortion that's involved. It's things like contraception. In the Griswold case is the perfect example of that. That was not legal. Mm-hmm. And there had to be a Supreme Court case to settle that one. So it's all kinds of other rights to bodily autonomy that are involved in that. She said she would have much preferred a case which was based on equal protection,
you know,
the 14th Amendment, because then you would not have had this very challengeable case, Roe versus Wade. And people on the left, she's just abandoning us, blah, blah, blah. Nonsense. She was telling the truth, and she turned out to be absolutely right.
You know, Christine, you know, there's so much. We don't have any rights anymore. We don't have any privacy anymore. You can't, I don't want to hide anything, but doggone, it's none of your business.
Mind your own darn business. I think one of the candidates has that as a slogan anyway. So,
but they can't. I mean, there's nothing that is private anymore that someone from the dark web or, you know, whatever, they can find out anything about you. So everybody goes, well, I'm going to be protected. I'm going to protect. You can't protect yourself anymore.
I think that's probably very close to real. I think you're right. And we all sort of sense that, you know. And some of it's good. For example, you have cameras on traffic flows, crime scenes and all that. That's one thing. But just basic privacy. I mean, what do you do when a drone flies over your property? You don't know what it's doing. Checking you out in your turn-of-the-century bathing suit. I mean, what?
Yes.
You know what they're doing.
I love that story. That is so cool.
It's a good one. It lasted for me for a long time.
When we were at Channel 31, one time, this was after we had a new news director at that time. You were the news director when I came aboard.
Yeah.
On board.
Mm-hmm.
But the new, and I said, you know, we get ten days, heat, hot. This is what Sacramento is. I said, let me put a cardboard cutout of myself out there. And you hear the voice that says, you know what was yesterday? You know what it is today? Well, that's what it's going to be tomorrow. And they wouldn't let me do it. You know, it's just.
This is consultant created, which lacks all creativity.
Yeah.
And you should be able to do those things at a small station and not the biggest market. You should be able to goof around a bit. That's what makes it fun. You know, this is not, Sacramento has never been, San Francisco, New York, Chicago, big market.
No.
And this was a small station, and that particular person was just so driven by consultant-created points of view. You can't do anything that's really unique.
Because
it wasn't fun.
We only have a couple of minutes here, but what does Christine Kraft want to do now?
Well, I'll tell you one thing I'm going to get through the stress of this election. I have never been a crafty person. I mean, a craft person.
Mm-hmm.
I suddenly have become one. There's
really?
Crazy. And this calms me down. It gets me through it.
What are you doing?
And it's,
Well, we have a wonderful group of restaurants. I won't say which coastal community I live in, but one of them was just visited by Taylor Swift, as a matter of fact. Anyway, these restaurants serve oysters. And I never got to eat oysters in Sacramento because I would never trust seafood that far away from the source. But in any event, they're fresh where I am. Mm-hmm. So I got some oysters, and they were yummy. And I said, the shells are so interesting, I'll take them home. Well, now I have a collection.
Oh, no.
of painting them bright acrylic colors and creamy iridescent colors on the inside, darker colors on the outside. You drill a hole in the shell. You put a little gold or silver string just so they'd be hang them as ornaments, and a little pearl, pearls of different sizes and colors and translucence, whatever. It's just a little artistic project. And I have promised that I will not buy any oyster shells. I will only decorate the ones that I eat.
That you eat?
So that gives me an excuse to order oysters, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm doing these little crazy projects. I also adore Halloween. Last year I went as Barbie as a witch, and because Barbie could be anything, right? So I had a pink, long pink wig and a cloak,
We
had the cutest kids who trick or treat in our area. So this year I'm doing an aquatic theme.
You're going to wear a bikini?
No, I'm not. I am going to be dressed. I'm going to be dressed, Mary Jane, as an octopus.
Oh no! Come on, really?
Yep, I found the perfect octopus costume, and then I have these big screens that are ocean scenes with sharks and octopi and squid and dolphins. So the kids will come up and they'll see this big, it'll be backlit. It'll look just like a crazy ocean scene. And then I will give them candy from my octopus hand.
Now, if they want to find out what Christine is up to, do you still have a website?
No, I do not.
Oh, I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
What about the book? From all of that.
Is that still out there? Too old, too ugly, and
just ordered two of them on was it Amazon or eBay? I forget. Yeah, too old, too ugly, not differential to men. I ordered a couple because you can still find them, because it's been out of print for a long time. But I have two wonderful people up in, actually, one's in Fresno. Used to be in Auburn. Her son was one of those people killed in our documentary, Everyone Counts, which you can watch on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Say the name of it again, because I don't think people know.
Everyone Counts. It's about 10 nasty deaths up in Auburn, really nasty ones. And the mother of one of those victims just contacted me. Please, can I get your book? I'll send you one. So I ordered one to send to her.
Aww.
So it is still available eBay or Amazon, yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, you've got to... You're not the kind of person that can sit around and twiddle your thumbs all day. You got to do something. You got to focus.
Painting oysters.
Yeah. How many can you eat? Those are aphrodisiacs,
More.
That's aphrodisiacs, my dear.
Well, they are. Well, a lot of good that's going to do me at this age. Actually, I have run into some of my old colleagues from Carmel days. And they're 80 now, so we look at each other. We talk, you text back and forth for a couple months before you dare to actually see them again, because you haven't seen them in 50 years, right, and they haven't seen you. So you'll say, okay, Barney, how do you feel about canes? I got 10 of them. So
makes you more comfortable.
How do you feel about dental implants? Somebody took my appliance. I think it's my dog. And then you get together again, and you walk on Carmel Beach, and it's lovely. So
yeah,
it all works out. But it's life,
Well, and the time doesn't mean anything. Time goes by so quickly. And hey, listen, people are living longer. And if we have to have body parts that are robotic, that's okay too. What the heck?
Can I please have a new ankle, a new knee, and let's see what else would I like? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know that only 6% of the population makes it to 80, so there's that.
Well, we're doing pretty good. I'm right behind you, so I'm hoping for 80. Pretty close.
If I make it, exactly.
Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me. I hope you'll come back and visit again, because we have more fun. This hour went by so doggone fast.
Is it over already?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yes. But anyway, sweetie.
Love you much, darling.
Right back at you, and I'm honored to call you friend, and it means a lot to me. It really
does. It always will be, because we're unique individuals. We know who we are. We're not confused about it.
Bye
for now.
Take care, sweetheart.
I will.
Christine Kraft, again. Too old, too ugly, not deferential to men. She's gorgeous, and she's never been deferential to anybody. And I love her for it. In the meantime, live simply, laugh often. love deeply, and above all else, you dare to dream. And here's a quick saying, don't take life too seriously. You'll never get out of it alive. Ain't that the truth?